The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. Exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. A special feature from Vermont Business for Social Responsibility. Underwritten in part by CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Today, we're going to spend the hour on an Alzheimer's journey. The number of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease is now at an all-time high. About 12,000 Vermonters are currently living with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia. By the year 2025, medical professionals say there will be as many as 17,000 people in Vermont living with Alzheimer's. This reflects a national trend. Alzheimer's is now the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. There are more than 5 million Americans living with the disease, and by 2050, this could more than triple to about 16 million people. A Vermont couple, Sky Yardley and Jane Dwinell, have taken a, well, unusual and courageous approach to their own experience with Alzheimer's disease. They're going public. They are maintaining a blog called Alzheimer's Canyon, which you can see at alzheimerscanyon.blogspot.com, in which they're talking about their own experience of dealing with Sky's growing dementia and his experience with dealing with Alzheimer's. We have in the studio today Jane Dwinell and Sky Yardley, and welcome to both of you to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Sky, let's begin with you. If you could just tell us a little bit about the two of you as a couple, a little of your story, so we get to know you a little.
Okay. The short version.
Yes, the short version.
Jane and I have been together for over 30 years, and of those 30 years, one has involved Alzheimer's, so it was a shock. And a small part of my life up to then. It's an unavoidable part of my life now.
You were a family mediator for much of your professional career, is that right?
I was. For several decades, I worked as a family mediator, other kinds of mediation as well. And I worked as a parent coordinator, which worked with high-conflict families and kids. And it was very rewarding.
And you did that in Central Vermont?
Did that in Central Vermont, also up in the Kingdom. And, yes.
And Jane, tell us a little bit about your life. You've actually, for listeners to the Vermont Conversation, they will recognize Jane Dwinell was a guest on this show last year. You were volunteering in Greece, I believe it was, helping refugees. But give us the longer version, because you've had many remarkable hats.
Well, my first career was as a registered nurse, and I ran the birthing center at Gifford Hospital in Randolph when it first began. I did that for 5 years, at which point I decided to fulfill a lifelong dream of opening a restaurant. So I left Gifford to open a vegetarian cafe in downtown Randolph. I had a great time, made no money, but I met Sky. He was my Thursday afternoon produce delivery guy. So I abandoned the restaurant to move to the Northeast Kingdom with him. He was living on a commune, having come to the kingdom in the early 70s with the commune movement, dropping out of Amherst to drive horses and sugar and do all those good hippie commune things. So at that point, I moved to the kingdom, and we bought a farm in Irisburg. Well, we bought land in Irisburg, built a house, started a small farm, had a couple of kids. At which point, I stopped being an RN after working at a local nursing home in their memory care unit, and then took up writing, which is when we met, and have since written 3 books and a lot of magazine articles and stuff. And after doing that for several years, I moved on to a new career as a Unitarian Universalist minister, went to seminary, came back and served the Unitarian congregation in Derby Line, Vermont, then worked for the denomination as a consultant to small congregations internationally, and then briefly served the congregation in Saranac Lake, New York. So that's the stuff that we have done.
Yes. And most recently, as mentioned, you were help working with refugees.
I went to volunteer on the island of Lesbos in January of 2016 at the height of the refugee crisis. I went as an RN working with a medical team. Our job was to meet the refugees as they came ashore in the boats, the little rubber dinghies from coming across from Turkey with the smugglers. And we took people in at the beach and made sure that they were their health was okay, at which time they went on to the refugee camp run by the UN.
And I encourage listeners who want to hear more of that story to go to VermontConversation.com and search on Jane Dwinell, and you'll hear her longer version of working with refugees. Jane, let's, using your RN hat, explain what Alzheimer's disease and dementia are.
Well, there are many different kinds of dementia, Alzheimer's being the most common, and dementia is a condition where the brain does not function as it should, and that can look different in different people. With Alzheimer's, the memory functions gradually disappear, as well as what they call executive functioning, being able to care for yourself and understand what's going on around you. There are many other kinds of dementia that some offer hallucinations and other higher anxiety. There's Lewy body dementia. There's vascular dementia. People can have dementia from Lyme disease that can be turned around with treatment, as well as vitamin B12 deficiency. And also people can have some form of dementia from traumatic brain injury that may or may not be resolved.
We're talking with Jane Dwinell and Sky Yardley, a Vermont couple, who are sharing their story of dealing with Alzheimer's disease. If you want to join this conversation, you can call 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Sky, let me ask you, when did you start to feel that something was not quite right with you?
That's a good question, and it's a complicated answer, because looking back now from where I sit, a year into my diagnosis, I can look at feelings I had, behaviors that I had, that now it's like, oh, slam dunk, that's Alzheimer's. That's what I am now, and I was then, and that would have been the furthest thing from my mind at the time. And I can give a couple examples.
Sure.
One is, well, and this involves Jane. We were working together on projects, which we always do. And she would tell me, "You're not listening to me. How come you didn't do this? You said you would." And I said, "Well, yeah, I was listening. What else was I going to do?" And she said, "Well, you better get your ears checked." So So I got my ears checked, got a set of hearing aids, and things were the same after that. With another friend, I was in New Orleans and volunteer, did some volunteer work, and she was fixing up her bathroom, and I was helping with that, and we were talking about the tile work, and we spent 3-4 more weeks every day looking at this bathroom, looking at the tile work, and I was helping because I had lots of great ideas. You know, oh, you could do this. Well, if you're going to do that, maybe you could do this. And that's really kind of cool. And so we spent all this time kind of spinning wheels into nowhere. And but it felt helpful at the time.
Mm.
But it wasn't really positive or helping to solve the problem.
Talk about the diagnosis and what really drove you to put things together to realize maybe there's a theme here between not hearing your wife and not being able to complete tasks.
Mm-hmm.
What made you go to the memory center? And
part of it was curiosity. I feel like I just stumbled on that website, which, yeah, sure. But I found the website, and they said that one of the things that they do is help people distinguish between normal aging, because there is forgetfulness that comes to all of us with increasing age, and a more, what they discreetly called, more serious medical problems, meaning dementia. So that would be kind of interesting, because I've been getting increasing flack, not just from Jane, but from the rest of my family and other people, like, you know, just kind of shaking their heads and say, well, why don't you, you know, Jane could get a colonoscopy. If Jane could get a colonoscopy, you could get a baseline checkout from a neurologist. And I said, well, yeah, I could. And maybe that would, you know, maybe they'd pipe down a little bit. And I said, so that's why I guess I ended up on that webpage. And I ended up making an appointment and to check it out so that I could check that off my list.
Mm.
That wasn't, you know, something else was, you know, something's going on, but man, I didn't think it was going to be. And it really wasn't a possibility in my mind at the time. Because because Alzheimer's is for old people. And I'm not old. I was 66. So in my mind, that wasn't old.
Mm.
But for some reason, medical professionals saw things differently. And the diagnosis itself was very complex. I thought I'd be able to go in and somehow get a blood test or something, get checked out, and that'd be it. Well, no. It took weeks, maybe over a month, from beginning to end, because they had to rule out everything else that would cause anything else that could cause memory loss. And there are a lot of things like Lyme disease, thyroid conditions, vitamin B12 issues, and that kind of thing. So it ended up, and taking neurological tests, it ended up taking quite a while and being involved. And I got into the process. I got into it with, I was kind of cocky about the whole thing. And I was going to show them that this is what it is, or this is what it isn't. So I write about that and that part of it in the blog. That kind of cockiness and taking tests and beating the tests.
Hmm. Well, let's. I'm going to ask Jane to read. So the blog that Skye is referring to is a blog that both Jane and Skye keep. In sharing their story, and you can read it at alzheimerscanyon.blogspot.com. Jane, you have an essay called The Diagnosis, and I'd like you to read it.
Yeah.
The results of your PET scan are consistent with early-stage Alzheimer's disease, says Dr. P, soothingly and solemnly. Thank God, I say to myself, I'm not going crazy. There is something wrong with Skye. I place my hand on Skye's arm and watch his deer-in-the-headlights look blossom. These words might be soothing to me, but they sure as hell aren't soothing to Skye. He claims he remembers little from that day, but with significant short-term memory loss, what can you expect? Can't say as I remember that much either. Some questions and answers between Skye and the doctor. No, we can't predict anything. Probably you have 6 to 8 good years, maybe more, maybe less. Not really answers then, mostly statements that could be said to anyone. Some discussion of medications, pros and cons, and whether it's worth trying one. Then we leave. We leave to go home after holding hands on the way to the car, in the car before Skye starts driving, and most of the way home. Luckily, it's not far. Skye makes 3 phone calls, to his oldest friend, to his sister, and then to his daughter. He will tell his son later that day when his son gets home from work. I try and give him privacy for those phone calls. I stay in the house, alternately crying and rejoicing. You may think it's cruel that I'm rejoicing. I'm happy, thrilled even, that after several years of knowing something was not right, I now know what the problem is. For me, knowing gives me the opportunity to do something about the problem. Not knowing leaves me constantly wondering, fussing, trying this, suggesting that, only to leave both Skye and I confused and no closer to an answer. Not that there is really anything for me to do now. This isn't a treatable disease like cancer or heart disease where one can research treatments, make changes to lifestyle, look for a second opinion, or the best research hospital. There's nothing to be done here. I don't even need to educate myself about the disease as I spent several years working in a memory care unit in a nursing home. I know about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. I know the kind of care that is necessary as someone reaches the stage of needing institutional or full-time help. So for right now, all there is for me to do is to learn patience, and it won't be easy.
That gives you an idea of the kind of candor with which the both of you are telling your story publicly. So, Jane, your experience as a nurse in a memory care unit, how does that prepare you, good or bad, for the situation you find yourself in now?
Well, as I tell Skye, the memories I have of working there, which was absolutely wonderful, is that people with dementia, that they are all very different, and the disease manifests itself differently in different people. Some people lose the ability to feed themselves and take care of themselves quite early on, and for other people, they're fine almost to the end. So in the unit, there would be some people that were ambulatory, some people in wheelchairs, some people that needed full care, some people that just needed somebody to monitor them so they stayed safe. So I appreciate that everybody was different, and that even if people couldn't speak, they could still communicate with their eyes. They could laugh and smile and sing. The best thing was some person from the community would come in the afternoon at about 4 o'clock, and we'd take everybody into the living room where there was a piano, and the person would play the piano, and people who didn't talk could sing. They could remember words to songs. And so music was really, really important. And that emotional energy that people, even if they couldn't communicate with words, they could communicate with their the rest of their body. And it was important for the staff to pay attention to that and honor that.
Skye, when you got the diagnosis, what did it make you feel? You've talked about thinking this was for old people and you weren't old, but was it scary to hear that term Alzheimer's applied to you?
Oh, it was completely scary. It couldn't have been scarier. Partly because, for a lot of reasons, but getting back to what Jane was saying about working in the memory care unit, and it was one of the best in Vermont, it's still... That's where it's a place where people will end up. And I'm thinking that there are three, it's commonly accepted as three stages of Alzheimer's. And I'm currently in the first stage, early stages. Then there's a mid stage where people often, many are still living independently or through the second stage. And the third stage where the stereotypes come in, you know, of the drooling people in the wheelchairs and, you know, just kind of out of it. But many people with Alzheimer's don't even get to that stage, don't ever experience that stage because they die of something else first or they get hit by a bus or something like that. So what I'm really interested in at this point in my life is to make the most out of what I've got now and what I've got ahead. And there's some optimism about that because I'm not completely out of it. And what would that mean anyway? Find out.
How do you make the most of it?
You make the most of it by living in the present, because that's something that I'm aware that that's where Alzheimer's does go. It grows, it changes, it gets worse. So, ironically, I mean, one of the goals in my life has been to live in the present. You know, pay attention to the present. This is the only thing we have, is the present. Which is something that I think all humans could benefit from. And with Alzheimer's, it's, I guarantee it, we get that long because you don't remember other things except the present.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide to blog and to be so public about your experience and to do things like come on this radio show?
To me, it was partly selfish because I was, you know, I'm not a prolific writer or a fast writer, but I find that writing about things does really help me learn about them, and things come up, and it makes me feel smarter in the face of a lot of Alzheimer's can feel like a kind of a growing stupidity, and I haven't written about this, but I've been thinking a lot about it, and I don't really know how it will come together. But in behaviors, anyway, a lot of things that I'm increasingly doing, I can see, would be called by many people stupid. For instance, there is a posting about this, of going to the store. And all of a sudden, completely out of the blue, I wasn't able to make change. I couldn't come up with 41 cents out of a pile of coins. And I just stood there with this line of college kids looking to buy their alcohol. And here I am pushing the coins around, just being stunned, that I can't figure out how do I make 41 cents? And I thought of it afterwards. I had a worksheet in this in second grade or third grade. You cut out the little quarters and dimes and stuff. And things like that can be shocking.
We're talking with Sky Yardley and Jane Dwinell about their Alzheimer's journey. We're going to continue this conversation just after the news. I'm David Goodman, and you're listening to The Vermont Conversation. Welcome back to The Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week with Sky Yardley and Jane Dwinell, a Vermont couple who are sharing their Alzheimer's journey. Sky was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease last fall, and he has been blogging about it at a website. A blog is alzheimerscanyon.blogspot.com. And Sky, I wanted to just ask, why do you call it Alzheimer's Canyon?
Good question. It was a feeling choice, and conveniently, I don't remember what the feelings were about that, but the feelings I have about it now is that Alzheimer's can be seen as a, you're headed downhill and you're not coming back. And at the same time, the environment that you're in is increasingly bizarre, strange, unusual, beautiful, spectacular. And so in this, there's a piece in the blog that's continuing, and it's a fictional, made-up journey of somebody who finds this Alzheimer's Canyon.
I'd like to ask you to read from that essay called The Alzheimer's Canyon, The Arrival.
Sure. "Good afternoon. How can we help today?" asked the smiling AmeriCorps worker behind the counter. "Well, I guess I could use a map or a guide or something," I respond. "Of course. We have these guides to the canyon itself, also accommodations, or will you be camping in your RV? I don't have an RV, just my own little car. I only got here because of a detour on the interstate." "Yes, well, we have options for you. For instance, you could try the homeless encampment in Area B past the dumpsters. They may have room for you under a piece of plastic. They're always getting new sheets in over there. Or if you prefer, the hotel may have a spot. It's $12,000 a month, or maybe a waiting list. I really don't know. Actually, I was trying to work some of the interactive exhibits over there, and I think they might be broken. Or maybe I'm not running them right." "Oh, you're fine. They don't do anything unless you're a caregiver," the attendant grins. "And unless you got grandma out there in your RV, I don't guess you're a caregiver. So since you aren't, I guess you're maybe a sufferer. And we really don't have anything for sufferers." "But I don't have an RV." "If you're in the market, we have quite a good selection of gently used motorhomes right now in Area E." "Can I just look at the canyon while I'm here?" "Of course. That's what this guide's all about." "Oh, yeah," I answered. "I saw that one. I couldn't make any sense out of it. The only English words on it said, 'Start here.'" "Exactly. It tells you everything you need to know." "Start here." "Sure, sir. But where?" "Right where you are. But wait, how do I find the overlook, the vista, whatever?" "Don't worry. You already found us. You're all set now." She's grinning again, but I'm getting a little irritated by this whole Alice in Wonderland routine. "Look, have you even got a guide in English?" "Sir, of course it's in English. You read it yourself." "No, no, no. You've got a big pile of typos here, young lady. See, it just says start here, and the rest of the map is blank. No trails, no landmarks, nothing. I can't even use my compass. It's totally useless." "Sir, if you're anxious, I can get your prescription. In the meantime, you may want to get started." "Started doing what?" "Man, I'm ready to be out of this place." "Well, sir, everyone's path is different. We can't predict what yours will be like, except that it's all downhill from here."
Your writing is remarkable. And you chose to fictionalize your experience. Why did you choose fiction for this? Because most of your blog is, of course, nonfiction, where you talk about your daily experience.
Well, that's a good question. But that's where it started for me, is the idea of this canyon that's so different and so strange. Just forgot the word. But spectacular.
Mm. Jane, let me ask, you have two children. What has the Alzheimer's journey been like for your two kids?
Well, our daughter lives in Montpelier, and so she's a little more distant. We live with our son in Burlington. So we live in a duplex with our son and his girlfriend. And so they have been, both of them, very involved on a day-to-day basis with us since before the diagnosis and with the diagnosis. They are fabulous. They're really involved and caring, and they're very helpful to give me a break when I'm like, okay, I've had enough of this. I need to go have some time by myself. And they'll spend time with Sky. I mean, Sky is still fine to be alone, so it's not that. It's more like doing fun things, playing disc golf, or we play bridge. We play other board games and stuff. So Sarah and Emma have been very, very supportive of us, and it's nice to know that they're there for the long haul. Dane has been supportive too, but in a different way, because she doesn't live with us. She lives in Montpelier, and what she's been doing so far is coming periodically and spending time with Sky. She and Sky, over their lifetime together, have always liked hiking together, and so they've been hiking, and You two used to do a lot of canoeing, too, in the spring. Have to find you a canoe. So there's still so many things people can do, and together, in a way, our life is still a lot the same as it always was as a family, because we always were an active family, skiing and disc golf and sports and board games and all that kind of stuff. So we're still doing that. And people are appreciating more the time, that it's more precious now. Certainly nobody expected this. There's no family history or anything. And, you know, I'm sure everybody expected both of us to live to be, who knows, you know, 90s or something. My mother died at 96. And, you know, so this came out of the blue. And, you know, I think everybody's doing really well.
Talk a little bit about the role of the caregiver. We often hear it about the challenges of being a caregiver to somebody with Alzheimer's. I'm looking at a fact sheet from the National Alzheimer's Association, and it has the statistics that 35% of caregivers for people with Alzheimer's or other dementia report that their health has gotten worse due to care responsibilities, compared to just 19% of caregivers for older people without dementia. What's been your experience? What are the special demands that Alzheimer's places on the caregiver?
Well, at this point, it's not as much as it will be in the future, because Sky's completely fine to take care of himself, and he's fine to be left alone. So at this point, for me, it's, as I mentioned in my essay, it's about developing patience, which I've never had a whole lot of ever in my life. So this is a new skill I'm working on, is patience, because Sky's short-term memory is really bad, and he will often ask the same question over again several times in the day. He's big on forgetting to eat meals, and so it's often my job or Sarah and Emma's job to say, Sky, so did you have lunch or not? There's some concern about safety at this point, but not as much as there will be in the future, fears of wandering or leaving the stove on or anything like that. Like, none of that. We're not there yet. We've been able to travel together fairly well. We went on a big trip in the winter, visiting friends and going skiing out west, and Sky did remarkably well, not getting lost at the mountain. I was impressed, given how big the mountain was. So for me, it's more that, I guess it's like having, you know, Sky is not a child, but it's like having a 4 or 5 year old around. Like, you can trust them mostly to be fine, but you keep an ear out for them. You know where they are at all times. So that's a new thing that I have to pay attention to, like where he is when he gets up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. You know, is he going to find his way? Is he going to find his way back to bed? So I'm a little more on edge, perhaps, maybe the right way to explain it at this point.
Well, let me ask, Sky, you have an essay called A Bad Day in Burlington, which I think really helps people to understand what is going on for you inside your head on just the kind of doing the normal mundane tasks of life. I'm wondering if you could read that for
us. Sure, I'd be happy to. And again, this is, now we're back to real life.
Yes.
There's going to be no canyon here. I planned on a quiet, relaxed morning, the start of a day and night on my own. Jane left town on a business trip, so I'll be on my own, usually a good time. Sure enough, I wake up early and completely enjoying the clear quiet of a winter morning, a calm that penetrates even into my home in the center of Burlington, Vermont's biggest city. But then, my peaceful, calm morning is ruined by something. Something must have happened, because now I'm a quivering ball of anxiety. I'm thinking about all the things to do. Some I must do. Others are optional. Planning ahead, I'd written all these down, just in case. But what, in fact, happened? What jerked me from my happy day to wallowing in my options? I know the answer, but I don't want to admit it. I don't remember what happened. Maybe something mysterious inside my brain, where my 100 billion neurons are under attack. Or maybe something else that I have so far completely forgotten. Time to get a grip, try some things. Today's Saturday, so the comedy shows on NPR might be worth a visit. They are, but then they're over. A friend calls to see if we might get together for lunch today. Oh, no, can't do that. I'm meeting daughter Dana, and then off with her to a healthcare rally. Cool. But wait. We're running out of time. I haven't heard from her, and she's supposed to arrive late morning. I call, no answer, text, ask where she is, remind her of the rally. She takes a few minutes to respond. Wisely, she calls. Also wisely, she tells me, I have the wrong date. I've got the schedule right, but totally the wrong day. This is all supposed to happen tomorrow instead. Though talking with Dana calms me down some, for some reason, I don't let on how scattered I feel. I'm bouncing down a decrepit bobsled track, but it's not fun. The run hasn't been maintained. There's potholes and patches and jagged ice. I'm getting beat up just trying to maintain a semblance of emotional control. Where does all this come from? Searching for soothing, I get domestic and heat up yesterday's soup that I like so much, and I start some sunflower seeds for toasting. Then all my options crowding against each other, I crave getting outside. So I shut down the stove, pack up Jane's package for the post office. Not sure of their hours. I do remember that they have shortened hours on Saturday, and because of holidays, the package must be mailed today. So I go there first. Anxious still, the first thing I do at the post office, check the hours, and sigh loudly with relief that they stay open till 4 or 5 on Saturdays. Good. I can relax. Feeling a little more on top of it, I go inside the heated lobby. I'm stunned to see the closed sign on the door leading to the service windows. A discreet sign informs the public that the windows close at 1 p.m. on Saturdays, and I lose it. I check to see if there might be someone, anyone, in the building. There isn't. I am so stupid. I don't want to be like this. Thank goodness this is a time of tears, because here comes some more. I'm starting to pull my sniveling self together to ride back home on my bike when I hear a scream from Church Street nearby. Then another. Running feet. More screams. It sounds like people are having an even harder day than mine. As I make my way over there, I see a group of maybe 24 women holding signs. Panic! Scream! Too much! Panic! they pass around a bullhorn, and each person says a sentence or two about another unbelievable outrage expected from the incoming presidential administration. After each one speaks, all the women scream and run in terror, waving their signs. It was a little funny around the edges, but to me, the screams conveyed pure horror. At the end, the woman with the bullhorn shouted the question, "What can we do so we don't have to scream?" A popular answer, "Fight back." That's what I need to do, fight back. How? What is it now, really, that I am fighting? I can start with finding a way to overnight Jane's package that I was entrusted to ship. I wonder if the extra charges can count as a medical expense.
I love the way that you inject humor into a situation where you're also describing panic and terror. What role does humor have for you in dealing with your situation, Sky?
It keeps me alive. Keeps me on top of it. It keeps me from falling in into a place where it's not easy to get out of.
Actually, when he first got diagnosed, he emailed a bunch of his friends and said, "Everybody, email me Alzheimer's jokes." We got a good collection.
Well, I know that you are both lifelong activists, have been engaged in many, many issues, from refugees to Black Lives Matters to a variety of social justice issues. And Jane, your calling now is to help establish, talk about a little bit what you're doing in terms of support groups and helping others with Alzheimer's.
Well, we're working on a couple of things right now. One is to start a support group for people in the early stages of Alzheimer's and their whatever of their loved ones that would like to come. We have found that that kind of support group doesn't seem to exist in Chittenden County, that the main support groups are for caregivers of people caring for people in the late stages of Alzheimer's. And we're interested in not only meeting people like us, but also providing support on a monthly basis with a support group. So we're looking for people that would like to join in that kind of thing. And then I'm also working...
And how can people who are listening or interested contact you?
Contact us. They can contact us through the blog or with email, janedwinell@gmail.com.
Okay. And again, that blog is alzheimerscanyon.blogspot.com.
And the second thing that I'm working on as a retired clergy member, I realized that now is a good time to work with congregations to help them learn how to be more welcoming to people with dementia, both coming to worship and as well as participating in the life of the congregation. As people have dementia and it progresses, often they become more confused with loud noises, people talking too fast, patterned carpet is hard to walk on. I mean, little things that...
Patterned carpet.
Yeah.
What's the issue there?
It's too confusing that people begin to lose visual functioning, that if something is all the same color, like a kitchen cabinet, that the doors are white and the knobs are white, it may be hard for them to distinguish which are the knobs to open the cabinet, so you can change out the color of the cabinet. Just little things that people wouldn't really realize. Having an order of worship that prints out all of the prayers or readings or whatever, so it's right there, because their memory, it may not be in their memory anymore. There is, in the Upper Valley, they've started a special worship service for people with dementia, which I'm considering doing. Either that or helping congregations learn how to make their regular worship service more dementia-friendly. So I'm going to be doing workshops for congregations, for their pastoral care team, and anybody else that would be interested in learning better ways to make their congregation more friendly.
Sky, let me ask you, you've chosen to be public and write this blog. What do you want people to know about having Alzheimer's disease?
Well, I think I've already said some of it, that I want people to know that it's not the end of the world. It seemed, although I was convinced of it for months, that it was the end of the world, that I had was looking at the end, and wow, how can I do that? I spent a lot of time in denial, or and I would call this denial of false hope, or hope that, or because one thing about the diagnosis is they can't give you a diagnosis and say you have Alzheimer's until they're looking at your physical brain and looking to see the signs of the disease in the brain. So the best they can do is say, well, you have probable Alzheimer's. I don't know if that was real helpful for me, because I would focus on the probable than on the Alzheimer's. And so that's why I went with this testing, and then I had to get more testing, and then I had to get MRIs and then another MRI just to so they could have the proper data. But denial was really helpful to me for a while, but then I was able to get by it through some more through experiencing more pain, I have to say.
Sky, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? I wrote down. Can you ask another question to Jane?
Yes, I'm going to ask Jane. What gives you hope?
I got it.
You found it. Okay.
Here. Okay.
No, you go ahead.
One thing that gives me hope is that Alzheimer's is so slow. I'm just stunned at the pace of the changes, which are really, really gradual. Gradual and intermittent. What it makes me think of is those glaciers that are coming down into the ocean and pieces will fall off. That's what I feel like is going on in my brain. And luckily, what gives me hope is that I have 100 billion neurons in my brain, just like all of us do. And it takes a while to it's not like if you have a diagnosis of ALS, for instance, where you know that 2 years from now or 3 years from now, you won't be alive anymore. There's three more things.
Can you say them really
things,
quickly?
You just have to know.
Just say them quickly. Just read them.
Okay. Long-term memories last the longest. And the emotional flame that we have inside us lasts until we die.
Well,
the rest is just cognition.
Sky Yardley and Jane Dwinell, I want to thank both of you for your courage and your eloquence on sharing your story on The Vermont Conversation. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility has presented The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. The special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and Ski Erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.